Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Welcome back. Oh shit, I totally fucked up. But welcome back anyway. Taxation is theft. I'm here with Carrie McKinnon, whose name on screen is Kristen. sorry, that was from yesterday's show. We were having such an engaging conversation as we were getting this thing kicked off that I totally forgot to update the title underneath his picture. But I will work on that as we are going here. And are you trying to get your locks out there?
You know.
So Carrie McKinnon for U.S. Senate.
The great state of Texas.
Hashtag TX. How's it going, man?
Going really great. You know, I mean, we're going and a blowing, so to speak. I don't know if that sounds really bad.
We got to be very careful because we're on thin ice with the censors these days, apparently. Because of some censorship over at the YouTube video thing going on over there. But yeah, so we'll try
bleep,
to
bleep.
Sorry, I'm juggling at the same time. Okay, I'm done. The title is fixed. McKinnon2020.com.
That's the website, babe.
Yeah, so Carrie, you are a libertarian. Is that correct?
I am a libertarian. I mean, you know, I want you to do whatever makes you happy. I don't care. As long as you're not making anybody else unhappy.
Right.
So,
man, I've known you for so long, but I feel like I have to ask this question anyway. Because I don't think I know this story. What was your, transition into libertarianism? Were you born this way? Did the police beat you up one day?
I think we're all inherently born free. We're inherently born with liberty. Just for some reason, through our environment, through our education system, through organized religion, all the different things in our environment, we start to believe that we don't have that freedom, or that we have to live under rules that are given to us or laws that are set down by somebody on high because they can do that. And we sometimes just bow down to authority when what we should be doing is questioning that authority at least. And I think when we start questioning that authority, we realize that, wait a second, that's not right. I'm supposed to be able to keep the fruits of my labor. All of my labor is supposed to, you know, the fruits from my labor are supposed to be mine. Why is this entity that did absolutely nothing get part of it? That doesn't mean that we're not compassionate. And we are not charitable as individuals, some more than others, because, you know, we can't really dictate who that is. But, you know, I grew up on a farm, on a cotton farm here in Texas, and we relied heavily on the pricing that was set by the market within commodities. And some of that was in government regulation and some of it wasn't. And pretty much a lot of the family farmers are gone. most of the farmers are, it's a big corporation now. And it's done that way simply so that you can take advantage of tax breaks. You can take advantage of a corporate welfare system that's for the farmers. And so for a long time, I wasn't involved in politics simply because, you know, being who I am, it's hard to be involved in politics because people put a label on you automatically as just, you know, that's who you are and you're nothing else other than being an openly gay man. You know, I mean, like, that's, there's so much more to carry than just that, but that's what you, that's part of the reason that I took a long time to get involved in politics. And when I did, I looked at all the different parties and I came to the conclusion that, you know, I mean, the Democrats basically just blow smoke up my ass to get my vote and don't really care about my liberties and freedoms or protecting me in any way or supporting me in any way. All they care about is my vote every 4 years, every 2 years, 6 years, whatever it is. The Republicans would prefer that I didn't exist for the most part, except for a few select in the Republicans. And I did talk to the individuals at Stonewall Democrats, which is the LGBTQ part of the Democratic Party, even though I say gender and sexual minorities, GSM, and the Long Cabin Republicans. The Greens, a little too militant for me. You know, I'm not really into just force, force, force. I like for people to have free will. And as I researched the Libertarian Party and I learned more about the Libertarian Party, I discovered that that fits with who I am and who what I believe more than anything else. And part of the reason I started researching is because I wanted to run for office. You know, I mean, I'm, you know, we talk about some people that came to the party just because they want to run under the Libertarian banner. I pretty much probably could fit into that category. So I've ran for the Texas House. I ran for the Texas Senate. I ran for the Texas Lieutenant Governorship. And now I'm running for the U.S. Senate. I would run for president, but, you know,
you already have a wonderful candidate to vote for.
I already have so many great people that are running that I can't even make up a choice. And I would really hate to I'd really hate to start a campaign and outshine everybody because, I mean, who wouldn't vote for me, right?
Well, I'd definitely vote for you if I were in your Senate district. That's for damn sure. And I did, well, no, I would, well... Yeah, I did support you for lieutenant governor when you ran. I think I abstained from voting that year. I know. I saw your smile go to a frown. No, it was because that was the Gary Johnson year, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but you didn't have to. Look, when you go to vote.
Yeah, you don't have to punch every hole.
Choose what you vote in. You don't have to. If you
don't. I think I was out of the country and I was like. I was just like, you know what? It's not even worth my time to go back because that just killed it for me. Like, I'm sorry. I know I really should have gone and I should have voted for everybody else, but it, man, that guy really just killed it for me.
Called absentee voting. You know that, right?
Can you do that in Texas?
Yeah. You have to call the Secretary of State and ask for the
form. Because I was looking up the rules on that and I thought you could only do it if you were like in a hospital bed.
Well, there are certain rules that do apply. If you're working out of the state at the time, via your job, if you're in the military, if you're in a hospital bed, if you're in a nursing home, sometimes that happens, assuming that, you know, if you're bedridden, right. But you still have home health care. There are stipulations, but I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, I used to get... Before I moved back to Texas, I would get a mail-in ballot when I was in California.
Yeah, well, I still get mail-in ballots from California, actually.
And I'm like, why are you mailing a mail-in ballot to Texas to me when you know I can't freaking do that?
Right. All right. So when you said you looked at these different parties, did you like? Were you? Surely you had some idea. You've heard of Democrats and Republicans at that point, or did you just say like, okay, I see a bunch of people on TV. I'm sick of hearing what they're saying. Let me look into this. And you like looked up, okay, what parties are there? Or did you just kind of see like what was?
So I was an election official in California mm-hmm. when I lived over in California. And my husband is driving me crazy right now. Yes.
I'm video chatting with the next president of the United States.
Is that what you just tweeted to somebody?
No, that's what I'm telling you. You should tweet. I mean, come on.
So, I worked the divisions, the elections officials, and I was like, holy crap, there's like 16 different parties. You know, so then when I moved to Tech, because when you grow up, all you hear about is the Democrats and Republicans,
yep.
because that's all that's ever on TV. If you were here in Texas, you might have heard about Ross Perot, depending on how old you are. You might have heard about Clayton Williams in some circles, depending on how things are, Kiki Friedman, you know, different things in the state of Texas. But for the most part, when you were growing up and if you took world history, you knew about the different parties that had come and gone within our political system. And even in school, they talk about the Republicans and the Democrats.
Right.
Your high school teachers aren't saying, you know, in the last election on a test, who won? Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? They don't say Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Gary Johnson, or Jill Stein.
Right.
They don't say that. Or whatever his name was that was in the Constitution Party. I can't remember his name now.
Yeah.
But they don't say that on the test. They just say the Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
So you because
that's like, I mean, they're like a lot of people will say, yeah, they're not censoring these other people and just nobody's ever heard of them. But it's like nobody's ever heard of them because nobody's talking about them in the media who have the responsibility of delivering to people what's going on in current affairs. There are all these other parties that are offering candidates and the news doesn't want to comment on that. And that's, of course, because we know that they're controlled by the oligarchy, the two-party system, whatever you want to call it, the deep state, depending on what circle of conspiracy theories you're in.
Well, I mean, and it's not just the media. It's also our education system.
Yep.
You know, the education system is not taught, you know, when you take a history class or you take current history or world history, they're not talking about, you know, the independence and breaking it down that this is, you know, the independents are not, they're independent from parties. And there are four or five or six or 18 parties in the state or in the country. So we have an uphill battle that we have to fight before polling ever happens. And so, you know, when somebody does a poll and they call you and they go, okay, who are you going to vote for president? Are you voting for Trump, Warren, or whoever the hell the Democrats are going to have, or other? Well, what is other?
Right.
You know, they are already cutting that voice recognition, I mean, that name recognition to nothing.
Right.
And so there's you can't even say 15% of other is for you.
Right. I mean, like, what's interesting about that is, okay, because, like, devil's advocate, right? Well, if you know, if they say other and nobody knows Berman, they're not going to say Berman. So it's like, if they would have listed the names out, would they have said Berman anyway? Maybe not. But at the same time, when you give them two options and you say, well, are you going to vote for Hillary or Trump or other, like, they're already in that mindset. Well, I hate Trump. I'll pick Hillary. I don't know much about her. But, like, that creates that like, almost like a false dichotomy of, like, these are your two options.
Well, and they have told me, I've taken those polls before and those surveys. And it is, I'm like, look, I don't like either one of them. And they're going, but if you had to choose, and I said, if I had to choose, I wouldn't freaking vote. And they're like, but sir, if you had to pick one of the two.
If you don't tell me who you're voting for, I'm going to shoot a baby puppy.
And I said, I don't want to take you. I don't want to do your poll anymore. I don't care to pick, you know, why would I pick the lesser of two evils? I'm still picking evil.
Right.
And I'm not saying that Hillary's completely evil or Donald Trump's completely evil. That's, you know, it's not like they're the Antichrist.
Hillary.
They're not quite. I mean, come on. Let's get real. But, I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to say that the government should be regulating elections in regards to the way that polls are done, but I think it does a disservice to the voter, not just to the candidates that aren't a Democrat or Republican, but it does a disservice to the voter when they don't list everyone that would be on the ballot.
Right. Well, so, and here's what's interesting about that, because, like, especially right now, everyone's talking about New York, and they just passed this thing where, you know, you need to get in a presidential or governor race, you need to get like 120,000 votes now, just for your party to maintain ballot access. But that also means that a brand new party coming along is, they're going to have to, I guess, petition like hell to establish for the very first time. Ballot access. So, like, when you, these are government rules, right? So it's kind of like, you know, anytime you mention, well, yeah, if the government could get in to regulate what these polls are doing, they'd probably get in there and say something, well, if you're polling at 10%, then you have to be included in the polls, but you're never going to poll at 10% if you're not included in the polls. So it's, you know, they're probably going to come up with some idiotic rule like that, that we're always fighting against, just to make sure that, you know, they are including people on the ballots, which is, I mean, it's crazy. But I think there's also,
they try to say it's a cost issue. Is it really a cost issue for you to add two more names to the ballot?
Right. Especially when it's all electronic now in a lot of places. I mean, anyway.
Whoa, somebody had to write a little bit more code.
Yeah, that shouldn't cost anything. It costs us, well, I don't know, you know, the government might have a contract with somebody that says every time the pixel on the screen changes a color, that costs you a penny. That sounds like a government contract right there.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It's like, you know, if we include three people on this race, it's going to be an extra $100,000.
Right.
And they're like, well, then we just won't do it.
Yeah. So I want to talk about this too. Was there, when you got involved in politics at all, did you have any fear about it? Like, were you hesitant because, just anything, like you were afraid that your opinion might be rejected or, anything like that, that made you hesitate before you got in? Or did you just get pissed off enough one day that you just said, hey, this isn't right, I'm going to get in? How did you kind of enter into that?
So I've never been afraid to voice my opinion. Although I have tried to choose my words wisely and how I do so that I am alienating the least amount of people. I wasn't afraid that anybody was going to ostracize me or do me physically harm or damage my reputation. I mean, please. Okay. So I know that that happens to some people. I mean, I know there are people that are worried about their past coming to light, or somebody in their family or a loved one being ostracized or being put through the ringer because they're running for office. We are not in a position as libertarians for that to be something that would probably happen. Now, when we start winning elections and when we're polling higher, of course they're going to look at, you know, if your great great grandfather was a bootlegger or a cattle rustler or whatever.
That would be, I think, bragging rights in the libertarian circle, as far as bootlegging anyway.
Yes. Well, I mean, look, I can trace my roots to Scotland, and two brothers came from Scotland in 1775 with a land grant to America. They had a land grant from King George, and they had a land grant and they had a plantation. As soon as they got to America, being the good Scotsmen that they were, they decided that they were going to fight for America in the Revolutionary War. But I also have individuals that are, because they settled in the South, I have individuals that fought in the Civil War for the South. So I think things like that come out, and we can't run from our history. But I was never scared of any of that being something that somebody would put out there and, oh my God, you know, I mean, who cares? I wasn't worried about my voice being heard. I was worried about, since I chose the Libertarian Party, that I was voicing my belief or my stance or my opinion on issues and topics in a way that was libertarian. And I think that's a learned thing. I think I was more ostracized or more criticized or more looked at closely in the Libertarian Party than I was outside of the party. Sort of an eat your own situation. But I never worried about running for office would be something difficult. I did think that, you know, as I looked at things, and I looked at things in regards to, you know, some of the hoops that Walter and I have to jump through, you know, whereas we would have to spend over $10,000 to get the same protection that the government provides for us or provides for spouses for a $72 license. So when people say, I don't want the government involved in marriage, but for financially, you spend the $72 rather than spend the $10,000 or thousands of dollars, depending on what lawyer you have and what you need to get done, to have the same protections of survivorship, guardianship, the right to visit someone in the hospital, the right to, for medical care, things like that, property rights, all that different stuff comes into play. And it's smarter to spend the $72 and get a piece of paper from the government. Now, Walter and I love each other. Walter and I are, you know, we're married, and we're glad that we have a marriage license, and it's part of who we are. But, you know, we didn't just do it because we wanted the benefits. We also love each other. But when you speak to it in a libertarian standpoint, that is something that for $72, I get all the same benefits, because these are benefits that the government has deemed that is in their control to pass down, or to deem who gets those benefits and who doesn't.
Right.
I think that's pretty crappy.
What's interesting about that, though, is like, because I know, yeah, you hire a lawyer to write, you know, whether it's a will or power of attorney and those sort of things, it can get expensive. But at the same time, I mean, this is something, the reason it's only $72 with the government is because they've crafted one, it's basically like one version of a will and power of attorney and all these other rules. And instead of putting it in one contract for each couple, they put it in the code. And then when you register with the state, now you are controlled by the code. You're basically bound to a contract that's in the code. So what's interesting about that is you could just say, okay, let's go to, like, you know, a legal Zoom or something like that and say, okay, we want a non-governmental marriage contract that has all these things. Select it, and then maybe you go through it and you check off some options. You want to include like a prenup about whose property is what, you know, do make some small modifications that's not, you know, that's outside of the standard template, and pay $72 for that. So I think that's,
well, you also have to realize when Walter and I got married, I wasn't identifying myself as a libertarian. That came later.
Right.
So I didn't think in terms of how can I do the exact same thing cheaply, but also keep the government out of my business. It didn't come till later when I was doing all the research that I was like, okay, wait a second. There are some options that I didn't have, that how can we put those options on the table for other individuals that want to have non-traditional marriages or non-traditional contracts or partnerships, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
I mean, we have individuals in this party that, I mean, you know, when we talk about polygamy, you know, the government says you can only have that one contract, that contract with one person. You can't have that same contract. You can't have that same type of relationship with more than one person. Now, I'm not one of those people that would want to have it with more than one person, but who am I to say those people can't?
Right.
Who's the government to say that those people can't? You know, who's the government to dictate the definitions of our relationships?
And that's an interesting one too, because, like, I see people getting in conversations online all the time. You know, when people talk about trans rights or LGBT rights or, you know, anything, they say, well, what kind of rights is it that we're talking about? It's not like they can't go and open a bank account and they can't go and get a job and, you know, all these things. And it's like I was even looking at some of the laws in Texas, like just like two people staying in a house becomes common law marriage. And then if that marriage doesn't fit the description of what's legal, people could be hauled off to jail. And I don't think that's so much enforced anymore, but like some other states are, they do have those laws. And I don't know what it takes for, you know, because I mean, a cop comes knocking on your door, you say, do you have a warrant? Does it take a neighbor to rat you out? I don't know, but that's, I think, still potentially a thing. I haven't heard any stories about people getting arrested lately, but I don't know that it's not going on. I don't know that all those laws have been overturned. But that's a legitimate fear. And that's like even outside of just like, okay, you got a contract taken care of, but now it's like, okay, but there's this other layer of mayhem from the government that you got to worry about.
Well, if you think about it in terms of, let's say, red flag laws.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatever that is, whatever the reason that law is there, and now we're saying that other people can speak to your mental health and your physical health, well-being. I mean, at some point, if those laws stay on the books, whether you, no matter what your stance is on guns, no matter what your stance is on that, if you think that is okay for someone else to call the authorities to come check on you because of your mental health, that you should not have a right or a freedom that you have, at some point it will move into, well, we don't think that they should be able to have children if they can't support them. So based on their finances, they can't have those children. So the government will come take those children away.
And then it's like a call from the neighbor. We need a red flag investigation because we saw they just bought a new car and we know they can't afford it.
Yeah, like they just got a new car and they're on WIC.
Yeah, take their kids away.
So, where does it stop? And it creates precedents that further embeds the government into our private lives and further becomes a not only just a nanny state, but a nanny state that is a police state that other citizens are okay with because it gives them some sort of thrill, or they feel like they are doing the right thing as a citizen. I'm doing the right thing as a citizen by calling the cop to do a welfare check on this person. Well, I mean, I get that, and I want people to be okay. I want us to do well. But if it's really a welfare check, the police really aren't trained to handle that. Why wouldn't you call the paramedics or individuals that have their degree in psychology or psychiatry to come deal with a mental health issue?
And that's really interesting too, because who do you call? What number do you dial? You're not like looking in the phone book for the local police. You're calling 911 probably. They're deciding who they're going to send.
If you don't say that it's a fire, right? Mm-hmm. There's no sense in them sending the fire department. If you don't say that someone is actually hurt and you need an ambulance, they don't send an ambulance. They send the police.
Yep.
The person that arrives could be someone that has got tons of training and can deal with the situation at hand. But it could be somebody that's a complete idiot
and has mental issues of their own.
That has mental issues of their own, and for some reason, they deal with it in the most inappropriate way possible, which is either they escalate the situation to where the only outcome is someone getting shot or hurt or dead, and the majority of that time, someone's getting arrested when was probably not at all the intention of the person who called. I mean, look at the lady that was shot through her window because the neighbor called because of the child. They were worried about the child. You know, look at the guy here right now that's looking at facing the death penalty because of a no-knock warrant.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, because... Oh my God, you just kicked in my door, and instead of me defending myself and defending my property, the first thing I need to remember to do is to ask you, are you part of the police department?
Right.
I mean, a no-knock warrant, I mean, who is the idiot that wrote those laws? Because it does nothing but cause mayhem and destruction. And there, it causes nothing but injuries and deaths on both sides. And the whole point is, if I was a policeman, I'd be like, oh, and you lost your damn mind that I'm going to do a no-knock warrant. I would think that the police department would be the first organization that would be standing up going, wait a second. There is an opportunity that our siblings in blue could get shot.
Well, I think also that's got something to do with the training, I'm sure. Because if you think about it, I mean, yeah, a cop, first day on the job. Yeah, see that house right there? Kick the door in and just go in and arrest everybody. He's like, wait a minute, what's inside? Are they armed? And when they go through training, they probably go through some training scenarios, which are, you know, the drug dealer on the couch gets up and shoots at you. Make sure you shoot him dead before he gets you. Expect that there are people in there with guns who are going to shoot back, and expect that they're bad people. And so make sure you get them first and don't stop and ask questions, because that's how you're going to get killed. And when they're trained on that,
I think they have to expect that. Okay, look, I think they have to expect that the individual that is going into that has got to definitely, of course, the person that I'm staying with gets a phone call where we're doing this, right? I think I have no idea what it's about. I don't care. I think that, look, cops have a hard job. I think that's something that everybody can agree on, because they are either the awesome person that came to help you, or they're that asshole that shot your dog. Right? They're the good guy that showed up and arrested the person who tried to rob you or hurt you, or they're that asshole that stopped you for revenue generating to give you a ticket for going 1 mile over the speed limit. There is no in between for them. The problem is we have to address it in a way of, if you think you have enough training, then you're wrong. Because if you had enough training, these incidents would not be happening. You are the person that is supposed to be trained not to escalate the situation. And if you are, then this may not be the job for you. Right? And then the other thing needs to be, why can't we have limited liability insurance? And so it is attached to the way that you conduct yourself on your job. So if you're a cop and you have limited liability insurance and you keep screwing up, if you're a racist bastard, your insurance is going to go so far that it's going to price you out of being a cop.
We just have to make sure that that's coming out of their paycheck, and that it's not. Oh yeah, with the state. Well, yeah, we'll cover it. It doesn't matter. Let it go up. We'll cover it. Don't worry. Just get out there and do your job.
Well, I think through the police unions, the police unions could say, you know, we will cover, because you know they're going to fight for that, right? Because the cops aren't going to want anything to come out of their paycheck. And I get that, but at a certain limit, that insurance has to be, you know, if you're the good cop and you're doing everything right and you're at the lowest level, that lowest level is covered. So if that lowest level is $10 a month, it's covered through your union dues. But anything after that comes out of your own paycheck. Well, can you imagine if you're a cop and your partner is that racist asshole? And you know that by being partnered with him, your insurance is going to skyrocket.
Yep.
How many people are going to say, listen, I'm not being partnered with him? And when he doesn't have anybody that's wanting to be partnered with him because he is a bad cop, because he doesn't do his job properly, he's going to go have to find another job.
The market solves problems.
I mean, if we really want to be libertarians and we want to talk about the free market solving problems, how do we figure out the free market to solve the problem of bad cops? Now, some people in the Libertarian Party say that all cops are bad because they enforce bad laws. Okay, I get that, but our battle is changing those laws. Our battle is fixing the things that legislators screwed up on. That's our job. That's where our fight is. Now, do we need to have better relationships with police departments as libertarians and saying, look, you know, this is where we're at. This is what we believe. This is what we believe are our rights. These are what our rights are constitutionally. And just because you wear a badge doesn't mean we're going to let you step all over those. And if we explain it that way, instead of saying you are the asshole because you got a badge, I think if we're explaining it, and look, do we have to do that? No. Are we allowed to say that they're bad because of what they just did? Yes. But we have to make sure that we're taking those opportunities to educate. And libertarians sometimes don't do that. Sometimes we don't take those opportunities to educate individuals about liberty. We just want to yell and scream at them and push a meme at them or push a slogan at them. And that all that does is close people off. It makes them where they don't want to listen. And, you know, it's like, is taxation theft? Yes. Okay, great. Taxation is theft. The people that understand that, they're already awake or woke or whatever the hell you want to say. But the people who don't understand that, continually saying taxation is theft at them doesn't work unless you provide education with it. You have to say, do you understand what I mean by taxation is theft? Do you understand that it's mine? It doesn't belong to the government or the state? That they are taking it without my permission, which is basically the definition of theft? Okay, you understand that, great. So if I'm from the government, it's okay for me to just come and take your vegetables that you're growing in your vegetable garden because I need it and you have too much, or I deem that you have too much, whether you do or not. I don't care that you're going to put some of it up for a rainy day or for the winter. That's just too bad, because Susie over here needs those vegetables right now. And I don't care that you did everything. I don't care that you planted them and grew them and watered them and fertilized them and weeded, and you went out there and picked them, because as the government, I'm not going to actually go out there and pick it. I'm going to wait for you to pick it and put it in a nice little box for me, or in a paycheck, so that I can put another thing on there that says this part of it is mine. I mean,
that's Negan's way.
People are smart. People are smart enough to know that taxation is theft. They just may not understand it because we're not presenting it in a way that is.
Well, there's always a justification for it in most cases. It's like, for a lot of people, it's interesting. There's always a justification. It's, you know, it's, yeah, but we need roads, we need police, and all these things. There's no way we could ever figure out a way to pay for them without just robbing people and putting it in a pot. Because believe me, I've had this conversation with a few people.
I don't believe that.
I really hear like some, it's interesting, because a lot of people will say taxation is not theft, and then they'll try to justify its necessity, but the necessity is not whether or not it's theft. That's like, you know, if somebody's attacking you and the only way for you to get away from this alive is to kill them, you killed them. It's not murder. It's manslaughter. It's self-defense, but it's necessary. And you can argue it's necessary all you want. You still took a person's life. Does that justify it in that particular case? Yes, it does. But if, of course, because they were trying to commit an act of violence against you, but if it's, hey, we need something. It's absolutely necessary. Civilization cannot function without this. We need whatever means necessary. We need to make sure that this happens. Then all of a sudden, stealing is okay. And this goes, I mean, if you look at like any aspect of government, what is eminent domain? What was that really used for? They wanted to seize property in order. It wasn't originally for Trump to like build his hotels. It was for, if we're being invaded by another country and we need to build a military base here, We're going to be able to seize that land because it's an absolute necessity. But don't worry, we'll compensate you. And so that necessity is always a driving factor. And you think about this too, even as libertarians, right? It's wrong to break and enter, right? It's wrong to like break and enter into somebody's house and use their kitchen and steal their food and stay there for a couple nights and then just leave because you damaged their door, you stole some of their food, right? But you're hunting, let's say you're hiking through the woods and a snowstorm comes along and your only chance of survival is that cabin right there. Do you break and enter? Yes, because it's necessary. It's necessary for your survival. Now, if you're a good person, you'll probably like leave some money behind when you leave to reimburse whoever was living there. But you're going to break and enter because it's absolutely necessary for your survival. Now, the difference is, are roads absolutely necessary for our survival? No. Is stealing the absolute only way to make roads exist? No. But it's this premise that if the roads dissolved, then so would all of humanity and we'd all starve to death. And then it makes a little bit more closer to the hiking through the woods scenario, right? And so in people's heads, that's how they see it. Like society would absolutely collapse if we didn't pay taxes. The roads would disappear. Tyrants would come in. There would be pirates everywhere where, you know, waving Coca-Cola flags and Walmart flags. And like that's what people, and it's propaganda that leads them to believe that. But that's the picture that's in a lot of people's heads that you have to unpaint.
I agree to some extent that you have to unpaint that picture. I think what happens is we have looked at certain things as they are sacred cows or they are necessities as opposed to luxuries. Food is a necessity.
Prepared food in a nice little box that lasts for 5 years on the shelf is a luxury.
Well,
I mean,
basic nutrition is needed by all human beings. It's a necessity.
Right.
Champagne and caviar is a luxury.
Right.
So the question becomes, even if I think that that's a necessity for you, that everyone should have clothing, basic clothing, so that they don't, so that they're protected from the elements, whatever those may be, for wherever they live. If I think people need basic nutrition because they need that to survive, if I think people need, basic preventative health care in the form of vitamins and minerals and things that, you know, that they would need just to survive, not that you need a liposuction, because that's not a necessity, that's a luxury. If I think that people need basic shelter, meaning that you need four walls, a floor, and a roof that has running water, so that, because water is a necessity for you to survive. All those are necessities. The question is it my responsibility to pay for it for you through taxation? Because now it has been deemed that is the government's responsibility to make sure that happens for you. Right. I think too often we have said that the government is the solution when it is often the problem, and private sector or free markets provide a much better solution than what the government does. In the private sector, you might go from eating peanut butter is pretty expensive now, but you might go from eating bologna sandwiches to every once in a while with the private sector and with charity, you might get to have a hamburger every now and then, or even a steak. Or you might get to have fresh vegetables and fruit. I don't know. I do know that what the government is doing does not move society forward for the betterment of society. And the proof to that is if you look at the VA and you want to say, well, we should have, you know, we should have government health care.
It'll be like the VA, except it's for everybody.
I mean, if you just look at the example of the government doing the VA. I mean, how many veterans commit suicide because they can't get health care in a timely fashion? How many people that are addicted to opiates that are part of the VA because that's all they could subscribe them, because God forbid they subscribe them
cannabis
or mushrooms to treat their anxiety or their PTSD or their pain.
Yeah, and if you self-medicate, then they take all your benefits away.
And if you self-medicate, they take your benefits away. I mean, you know, I just think that we have one party that says the government should take care of all of this. The government should be in charge and control of taking care of all of this. And we're going to tax everybody to pay for it. And the other party is like, well, we should be in control of it. But we're not going to tax for that. We're going to tax so that we can increase the industrial military complex. And we can get more resources and have military engagements or fight wars over resources, because by doing that, we can justify helping more people. And I mean, I'm like, neither one of you are right.
What's interesting about that whole thing is like, Let's say some tyrant came along and said, I want to control everything inside of this country and I want to control everything outside of this country. I want to control, you know, I want to control everything on list A and everything on list B. But the country's divided. So you've got half of the people that are like, yeah, controlling everything on list A would be good, but not list B. And then the other side is the reverse, right? So you have these two parties, and what do? They flip-flop. The one's in control, then the other's in control. And when one's in control, they grow control of list A, and they never take control off of list B. And then when the other party gets in control, they add control to list B, but they don't take it off of list A. And when they do it, they both have support of about half the country. Whereas if one guy came in and said, we're going to put control on list A and B, nobody would support it, because half the country would say, but you're going to put control on A and I don't want that. And the other half would say, you're going to put control on B and I don't want that. So nobody would support them. So instead what they do is divide and conquer, and they flip-flop back and forth.
Well, and here's the thing. Libertarians don't believe in sacred cows for the most part. I mean, you know, nothing cannot be done better by somebody other than the government. And nothing is so sacred that it can't be cut, that the spending on it can't be cut. Now, you know, some libertarians would be like, well, Kerry, you know, you were in the Senate and you voted. Now, you took us from, you didn't get rid of the Fed or you didn't get rid of the IRS, but you put a limit on them of 6%, period. So you're a bad libertarian because you voted for that tax. And I'm like, I just limited the crap out of them people. And that, yes, it's not what I wanted. But I'm the lone SOB libertarian in the Senate. I didn't have the majority. I didn't have the super majority. I had lonely me. Now, that's assuming I'm the only person that gets elected. But, you know, if you're the only senator, you know, something we talked about earlier, you're the minority. So you could argue for, based on Senate rules, and we would really have to research and get the argument down really pat for before we won and after we won the Senate, but that would be the minority whip. That would be the minority in the Senate or in the House. That would be the minority party. And they would gain all the privileges that come with that. And so whoever was in second place would just be in second place. And I think some of that control that happens there is really where the parties fight us on, because they know that they've set it up that we have to do statewide races, because statewide races keep us on the ballot if we get a certain percentage. And so some of our brightest stars, some of our individuals that are the most outspoken, the most learned, and not that those people don't exist that are running for local offices, because they do, but you have those people that will run for president or governor or lieutenant governor or senator. And you look at it and you're like, oh my God, that person could have won a local county commissioner race. That person could have won a city council race, a mayor race. You know, sometimes it even gets smaller than that when you think about it, because when you look at a metropolitan area like San Antonio, Dallas, Philadelphia, DC, Portland, Los Angeles, people go, oh, I'm going to run for mayor of LA. I'm going to run for mayor of San Antonio. I'm going to run for mayor of Philadelphia. I'm going to run for mayor of Miami. Because I want to be the big dog. I want to be the libertarian that does that. And it's like, dude, if you would have just ran for your county commissioner or your city council, you might have had a better chance of winning. You might have even won. We all, in our mind, whether we admit it or not as libertarians, we want to be the first libertarian. We want to be the first libertarian that gets 10% in a presidential race. We want to be the first libertarian that wins a congressional seat. We want to be the first libertarian that becomes a senator of a state, that becomes a governor of a state. There's nothing wrong with that, but you know, we always talk about, did they set a record? Did they do better than the last time? You know, what libertarian has the most votes in Texas ever? Well, then you go research it, and whoever it belongs to, now you're going, okay, well, can we beat that person? How did so-and-so do compared to past governor's races?
Right.
You know, I'm like, right. I get that, but it's sometimes we as libertarians let our ego get in the way of the progress that we could be making.
Right. And because the reason
that happens is because we don't support each other. You know that.
Right. But I think there's also, you know, and this is ego. It's when you go in there and say, you know, yeah, I'm going to run an awesome campaign and I'm going to win. And then you don't by a large margin, then it's like your ego is just so fried that so many people are like, I'm never going to run again. That was a waste of time and money. Instead of saying, wow, I learned so much about how to run a campaign, I should go back in and do this next time bigger and better. And I should include other people and spread this knowledge and spread this information so that other people can run also. I think that's a really important part that a lot of people just like, you know, they get knocked off the horse and then they're just like, ah, screw it. Horse riding wasn't for me. No, we need to get back on.
And if they do get back on, they also play the blame game. you know, they don't take full responsibility. Look, my lieutenant governor race, we got 2.22% of the vote. Yes, that's all we got. I have a drink right now. Okay, thank you, sir. That was my husband, Walter, everyone. Hello. He says hello. We don't come and go, look, we ran a hell of a campaign. Do I wish we'd have done better? Yes. Should we have won? Yes. Here's what we did right, here's what we did wrong, and here's what we're going to do better in the future. But we don't do that. We go into, well, if everybody would have supported me as the candidate, if everybody would have supported him as the candidate, I'm like, there's not enough freaking libertarians for that to matter. That's a bullshit argument to say if everybody would have supported him or her, she would have done better. Well, okay, technically you're correct that if every libertarian would have supported them and not bashed them or did something, they would have done better. That's a true statement. But you're assuming that the libertarians are making up the majority of a three-person race or a four-person race, and they don't right now.
Right.
The largest part of that is independents or undecideds or people that are apathetic or people that don't vote.
I think, like, to that point, it really depends on what you mean by support, because if by support, if all of those people, like, we're not just talking about went out and voted. We're talking about all those people became volunteers and knocked on a million doors, made a million phone calls, that sort of thing. That would make a much bigger impact than just like, okay, yeah, I'm not going to talk shit about the guy. I'm going to go out and vote for the guy. It's like volunteers, like, and donors. I mean, like, this is like what I think a lot of people don't understand, especially libertarians, because they don't like, they're tight with money. They don't want to donate to a losing candidate. But here's the thing. This is what I'm doing with my campaign, and hopefully it's what you're doing with yours too, is every dollar you take in, you reach people with that. If you bring in $10, you reach more people. You bring in $100, you reach more people. And you're not just reaching people with, hey, vote for this guy. You're reaching people in a way that's like, we're going to introduce you to something that's completely new, that's going to change the way you think about politics forever. Because once you go libertarian, you never go back, right?
Well, we do multiple things that we've done ever since I've ran for office. And whether it was me promoting up the ticket or down the ticket when I was lieutenant governor. Other than the filing fee, which is $5,000 that we pay on Friday to just be on the frickin' ballot.
Yeah.
Other than that crap, and it is crap, other than that's going to be a meme now, you know, is every dollar is spent in outreach. And when I'm in somebody's area and I'm out with them, or if I'm not out with them, I'm talking about the other libertarian candidates that are in that area. You know, when I was in Dallas, Fort Worth, I went block walking with Eric Espinosa. We didn't talk about, very rarely did we talk about me other than just to mention me. And then we mostly talked about him. When I went block walking with Kevin Hale, we talked about him. I think we would do much better percentage-wise and vote totals if it was like, and I understand you have 30 seconds at most to talk to somebody. I get that. But do you know you have this really great guy right here in your district named Kevin Hale that's running? Do you know the great guy that we have running for president, or great gal we have running for president? You know, there is somebody that is running in your district. If you did your work, if your county did your work, if the district did its work, if the party did its work, there's somebody running that you will like, that you can promote. even if you don't like the person who's running for president, you can actually go out and say, hey, we have a really great guy running for railroad commission. We have a great guy running for, or a great gal running for the Texas Supreme Court. You know, oh my God, have you heard about, let them go to the libertarian websites and find out who the other candidates are and make their own decision. You got to speak positive about who you can speak positive about if there are people that you're negative about. Look, people who don't know us don't give a rat's ass that you don't like a certain candidate. And when you first approach me and you tell me, well, you know, the Libertarian Party is really great, but I really can't stand this person. Why in living hell would I join your party?
Right. And that's ego again.
That doesn't endear me to make you want to become a part of your club.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's because I've seen that too. And I believe me, I get that shit all the time with my hat. Not this one, the big one. But it's like,
compensation, it's okay.
Like, there's this thing, right? So, like, let's say it, you know, it can be anything. It can be a TV show, right? Let's say I come to you and I say, hey, there's this really awesome TV show. You should watch it. It's really awesome. But there's this weird guy, and like they say a racial slur in it at one point in the thing, right? That's the one bad part about this movie. But everything else about this movie is great. Like, people are like afraid that, oh, you're gonna watch this, and then like, oh, or maybe it's gonna be the nudity scene, right? You tell your parents to watch a movie and they're like, oh, there was nudity. You're afraid of that. And so you try and prevent that by saying, well, except for this, just watch out for that one part, get around that. And I think that's what some people like, because that's what people say about my hat, right? They don't want to be associated with my hat when they're saying libertarian. We don't need a crazy candidate to be on the top of the ticket because everyone's going to think we're associated with that hat and they're afraid of it. When it's like, okay, so that's going to make them go out and say, well, yeah, the libertarian party's awesome, except for like this one guy that I don't agree with. But it's like, if you stop thinking like that and start thinking about just promoting the party as a whole and just say, hey, we're all about freedom. That's that.
We need to learn to praise. We have got to learn to praise each other. Look, I understand that everybody, even in the Libertarian Party of Texas, doesn't get along. You've been there, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But this week, on my birthday, December 2nd.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. On Monday, I was 51. So 51, I'm a senator candidate. By the time I turn 52, I'll be senator-elect. The thing is a member of our party, Kathy Glass, with her team, won in court an injunction in regards to the filing fee. That's freaking awesome. She should be praised for that. Good job. I don't give a crap about the rest of everything that's going on. I don't care how you feel about her. I don't care what you think. Good job for that. Right?
I didn't realize that was her. I'm gonna send her a thank you note right now, actually, or as soon as we get off this.
I mean, that's all you need to say is good job, Kathy. Okay? When you have other advocates, you know, like Patrick Smith, who's doing Feed the Need in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I don't care that you don't agree with all the other crap that he's doing, and you may not even consider him a libertarian. Great. I don't care. But good job on that. That's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's...
I may not think that we need to say taxation is theft at every freaking moment that we turn around.
Well, that's where we're going to have to disagree.
But I applaud you for doing so, because since you have done that and since you have made that part of your crusade, part of your activism, it is a topic of conversation that people now associate not only with you, but to some degree with libertarian and libertarianism as a whole. And that's a good thing. It's up to the rest of us to further that education because you've started the conversation. Right?
Yep.
And you should be applauded for that. If you wear a big hat, get on CNN, and then people want to know everything there is to know.
I feel like I gotta
feel like you gotta put it on, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, look. My issue is, I know that that's not all you are. I know that you as a candidate is not just a big yellow hat. That you as a candidate is not just taxation is theft. There's so much more. And my point is, I want everybody else to learn those other things about you. Just like I want people to know that I'm not just the openly gay libertarian candidate running for the U.S. Senate. I'm so much more than that. Not only am I so much more as that as a candidate, I'm so much more of that as a person. People need to make sure that we are applauding. We need to applaud the courage that it takes for individuals to run for office. We need to applaud the time that it takes, that they take away from their family and their friends to run for office. We need to learn to help them. It is not that hard. It's super easy. It is super easy to say, well, God, I'd never vote for somebody in a boot on their head. That is stupid. I'd never vote for somebody in a big yellow hat. I'd never vote for somebody that is just another old white man. I'd never vote for this person for that or that person for this or whatever. Nobody cares that you're saying that. That's easy to do. The hard thing to do is to set that person down and go, hey, can you explain to me why you feel the need to continue to do that? Or this is what I'm hearing from people when I talk about you as a candidate. What are some other things that I can offer them? Now, hopefully, as a smart person, already went to your website and I looked you up and I learned more about you. And I learned that you weren't just a guy in a big yellow hat, or you weren't just this, that, or the other, whatever it may be. Look, I think that there are some great things that each one of our candidates do that are running for president. There are great things that each one of them bring to the table. There is a lot of things that I would like to take from each one of them and put them together as one person, but we can't do that. And so what we have to do is we have to make sure we say, I applaud this person for doing that. I applaud this candidate for doing that. That was freaking awesome that you just did that. That was awesome that that happened. Thank you for bringing attention to the fact that taxation is theft. Right? But then we also need to say, that's how we need to say that. We don't need to go publicly and go, oh my God, can you believe? You know, there's things that each one of the there's things that happened at the convention that I think are not beneficial for the party and do not move the party forward and make us look crazy, childish, like idiots. But I also understand why those individuals do the things that they do at those conventions and why they organize and they do things that they do. So we have to learn praise them, and if they're doing something that we're offended by, not that it matters, but that we're offended by or we think hurts the party or we think that damages the party in some way, or we think we need to be having those conversations with those individuals. We don't need to be bashing them in the public forum. You know, there's every single presidential candidate called me and I'll tell them what's wrong with them. From my own personal viewpoint as an individual. And they can say, Carrie, go screw yourself. Or, oh my God, I never thought of that. Thank you for bringing it up, but I'm still not going to change. Or they can go, really? That's what people are saying or what people think? Okay. Well, let me think about it and I'll get back to you. Right? But we don't do that. It's like, oh, well, let me see how I can vilify that person. Or, oh, really? We're going to look like idiots if we nominate that person. I mean, we're relevant and we're not relevant. So does it really matter? I mean, at this point right now, does it really matter that our candidate at times wears a big yellow hat that says taxation is theft on it? Are we so freaking relevant in politics right now that we are getting, that it's a really is a three-way race, that, oh my God, he's going to lose the election for us because he chose to wear a big yellow hat?
I wish that were the case.
Well, I do too, because then I'd be grapping you out right now, and we'd be having a different type of conversation. But we're not there right yet. So since we're not there, does that put the conversation out in the public? And if it does put the conversation out there, how can we put the conversation out there that now people are going, okay, wait a second. Have you heard about this guy that's running for the Libertarian presidency? Yeah, he wears a big yellow hat that says taxation is theft. I mean, that's got to be some kind of joke. And then the person that they're talking to who's never seen it before goes, oh, wow, taxation is theft. Them exactly. Alone making fun of you has got another person that's going, wait a second. Taxation? Oh, my God. Taxation is theft.
Exactly.
Now, who is this guy? And then they go look you up, and the party may not have grown with respectability politics, but it did still grow organically, you know? And look, I don't want us to be waving dildos everywhere we go, try to make some type of stupid point or some valid point. You know, it's not my style. It's not the way I would do things. But I understand why people do it. I understand the validity of it. But I mean, we have, you know, part of what my campaign is doing is talking about that you are not powerless. Hashtag, you are not powerless. That means that you have the power. Your vote is part of your power. And I think if we can reach out to the, if a Democrat or a Republican changes their mind and says, oh my God, I'm going to vote for Kerry, that's awesome. But I talked to three people today who don't vote. Three. Just in one day. Now, it's not a lot. But I got right at 300 days. Till the election, 330 days. I mean, that's another 900 votes.
Yep.
You know, 900 votes in the last election would have moved me from 2.22 to 2.25. If I'm doing that every day, if I'm talking about liberty every day, if I'm talking about the party every day, if I'm talking about our candidates every day, and the so-called 120,000, 160,000 people that vote in Texas that are libertarians every election, if they're doing the same damn thing, how long do you think it takes? And if that's happening nationwide, how long do you think it takes before we start winning elections? How long do you think it takes before it's a three-way race? How long do you think it takes before when we talk about some legislation that we want to have passed, it actually ends up becoming bipartisan or nonpartisan because now it's three people, so it can't be bi. How long does it take? We have to stop shooting ourselves in the foot. We have to stop being our own worst saboteur.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, you know, I'm gonna do some things that people are gonna be like, holy crap. Libertarians don't talk about that. Libertarians don't talk about veteran affairs. Because we're just
Shut it all down.
You know? I mean, we have to learn that there are things that we need to grasp.
Right.
You know, we are the pro-peace, anti-war party, period. Because the Democrats, whether they want to say they are or not, are no longer that.
And the Republicans never were. To that point, like, I think what's difficult, because, I mean, I used to be like this. I used to just be like, shut the whole thing down. But it did take some time to come around and realize, because I grew up like this. I used to care, before I was a careless libertarian, I really cared about other people. Why doesn't government come along and solve everybody's problems? And then I realized how evil government was, and I was like, well, let's just shut the whole thing down and let's not worry about people's problems and we'll figure that out later. But then I came to now I'm like at the point where I'm like, we can't think like that. We have to understand that if we pull the plug on this system, things are going to go bad for a lot of people. So we have to figure out how to address those issues. And when we figure that out, then all of those people who are concerned about those issues, healthcare, education, social security, everything else, they're going to jump on board with us and support everything that we're doing because they know we're not just going to leave them out in the cold. And that's really important because that's how the government is set up against us. They have everybody dependent on it with all these different programs in such a way that people like us can never get their votes or their support because they're holding on with their life to these dependencies the government has.
If we don't have real solutions, and I mean real solutions that don't leave people out in the cold or phase them out of the dependency from the state, we look like greedy, selfish bastards.
Yes.
Period. And that's all they will ever say. And libertarians are some of the most compassionate people I know. In Dallas-Fort Worth area, the Tarrant County Libertarians have done backpacks for inner city with school supplies. Risa Willis just did a whole entire thing where she's handing out backpacks that have basic supplies that the homeless need. Christy Bellinger in her county does a thing for the kids that don't have homes that are part of the that need just for Halloween costumes. We have to become those charitable, compassionate individuals that we say that people really are, and that will take care of the stuff that the government takes care of, or we're just talking heads that really are heartless bastards.
Yep.
If you're not walking the walk, then whatever you're saying doesn't matter. Yep. I mean, does it really matter that person is sleeping out there in a tent that they had to piece back together and take back together because the police state came around and ripped it up and slashed it with scissors and knives because God forbid the homeless are sitting there? Well, while we think that's wrong, what are we doing about it to not make those individuals homeless? What opportunities are we looking for in the free market so there won't be any homeless? I mean, are we actually doing that?
Right.
I mean, we're really going to talk about, you know, the difference between being good stewards of the earth and of our fellow human beings. Are we really doing that as libertarians? Because I don't think we are. I think there are some libertarians that are doing that, and I think more libertarians would do it if they were financially able to do it. But the thing is, you know, we just talk about, well, the government shouldn't be doing that. That's not the government's responsibility. We shouldn't be taxed for that. and I don't care about the common good. It's not about you don't care about the common good. You think that the common good is something that can be taken care of by individuals and by organizations and by the free market and not by the government.
Right.
And if you truly believe that, you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem.
Yep.
I mean,
absolutely.
That's just the way it is.
So we're, I would love to keep you talking because you're saying some really awesome and important things. But we are beyond the end of the show. I want to give you an opportunity to, you know, just plug your campaign a little bit more. We've got your website, McKinnon2020.com on the screen. What do you need? Do you need, volunteers, donations?
We need volunteers. We're currently looking, we have a job up for a fundraising director. That's going to have pay involved on a commission basis. We will be putting up jobs after the first of the year for a digital director, someone to be in control of all of our digital media. Volunteers all across the state. Funds are important. I mean, the filing fee is taking a huge chunk of what we've raised. Now, granted, we did really good. We raised over $5,000, just a little bit over $5,000 since we announced on October 2nd. That's pretty good for a libertarian, because half the time you can't get people to donate to your to a campaign even after you win the nomination. And that's not me. That's not a dig on libertarians and libertarian donors. It's just we got to put our money where our mouth is. We want to have merchandise and tables and stuff, and at McKinnon2020.com, that's where you can donate. And I guarantee you that your money will be used in outreach. If that means that it's paying for gas for me to get someplace to talk to people, the gas got me there to talk to people. If it's flyers that we're handing out, if it's t-shirts, if it's buttons, if it's yard signs, if it's a table at national or a table at state, we have to get people excited about the Libertarian Party, about their own liberty, about the threat of losing even more liberty. And our job is to get those people excited about our party and about our candidates. And just remember, you are not powerless.
Awesome.
And that's I'll good. Come back. If you
need. Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to get you back on to finish your rant. No, but I'm going to go back and I'm going to get your little GIF and make a meme out of that. Yeah, there you go. Actually, wait, hang on. Do that one more time. All right. I just want to make sure I got a screenshot, just maybe a little bit more high res than the podcast. Anyway, Carrie, thanks again so much for coming on the show. It's always awesome talking to you. I will see you probably at the next time. Oh, hang on. There's an event in Dallas in January. Are you going to that?
We're looking at finances to see if we can.
Okay.
It's very important that we are good stewards of our donations that we receive.
Awesome. If you can't, I will see you, I'm sure, at the Texas convention in McAllen.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Awesome. And maybe I'll see you on the podcast before then.
Just so you know, I've already had two other presidential candidates donate to my campaign, so.
Didn't I?
Not yet.
You're gonna call me out like that?
Lieutenant Governor, but you didn't do this to the Senate.
No, I thought I did. All right, I'm gonna have to go back and check and make a donation.
Go double check. Maybe you did, but
I didn't use my full middle name, so you might not have recognized it.
Oh, that's probably what it is. I just figured it would be a taxation and stuff. Period.
Yeah, I should do that. And now we got to fight in North Carolina. They don't want to put my name on the ballot like that, but we'll see.
Well, good luck with that, man.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. I'll see you later.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying.
Beautiful, lovely Texas.
Sorry.
Texas.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?